Vanessa, happy Monday. That song just is gripping to my heart. The song, if you're listening live, if not, it's in the link, is Too Fast by Sonder. And it just, I was thinking about the topic today, Vanessa, which is grieve as gratitude. And his voice came in my head when I mean, this playlist is so appealing to me, because the concept of grief is so widespread and sadness is so unexpressed, and it leaks out of the voices of so many people and so many artists, and Sonder is one of them. And that Too Fast song, I remember I was in Italy a couple of years ago at a conference for How Do We Change the World for Women. That was a conference. And it was at the Bellagio in Italy. And I was like, this is really surreal. And I just kept listening to that song, Too Fast. People say I run too fast, move too fast. Oh, and no such thing as too fast for me. He was like, hey, we go, I'm moving at the speed of light, like a bullet.
Yeah.
I could be dead by the morning. I was just like, this is just it. It is the only
thing that's bizarre about you saying this right now, but not bizarre of a confirmation, is that 10 minutes ago, I was talking to Deandra, who's our artist, and Marissa, who's our graphic designer. And I was like, oh yeah, my friend's daughter wanted some Brent Fejas tickets. And I was like, they were so much, and we were trying to look. And then now, of all the songs, I get on and you're like, here this is.
Oh,
and
it's my just, God.
I know.
Yes.
Like 10 minutes ago, we were talking
that's
about Brent Fejas tickets.
You got to get that girl some Brent Fejas tickets. You got to get her some tickets. That's what that is. But there is a whole movement of young artists out here who are expressing pain in ways that are so deeply healthy. And that video is just so surreal and like startling. It's so beautiful. And it just talks about like almost The Walking Dead, how you just feel so shook and you're moving so fast at the speed of light. And it's just like, because you know that at any given moment, anything could happen. And like, that is a level of pervasive population level grief that requires expression, requires art, requires healing. If we are going to realize our mission, which is to increase the life expectancy of Black women by 10 years and 10 years, we better learn how to grieve and emote and feel. And so welcome to Black History Bootcamp. It is my absolute honor to be a part of this on day 17, I think. Is it, Vanessa? No, I never know the days. Day 17 of a 21-day journey of the Pledge
yes,
of Principles.
Principle 17, yes.
Yes, Pleasure Principle 17 of 21-day walking meditation, where we explore how to be pleased, how to feel alive, awakened, enraptured in our own bodies. And we have explored the most guttural and beautiful concepts, and today is no exception. My friends, today we are talking about a woman who in many ways was made famous by her ability to grieve in becoming a public and world known widow in a tragedy that just feels like that song feels, Too Fast. Today we are talking about Merle Evers Williams. And first of all, I want to invite, if there is any family member of the Evers family on, because I know that Rena Evers is a big supporter of Girl Trek, their daughter, and came out to join us when we went and laid a wreath on Fannie Lou Hamer's grave at the anniversary of her passing in Mississippi. And Rena, we are just felt so honored to be seen by you, and so grateful for your family's contribution to the civil rights movement, and so grateful for who you are as a woman. And it is no doubt because your mother is Merle Evers Williams. So Vanessa, I was swept away by the love affair between Merle and Medgar Evers. I was swept away by it. I was swept away by it. So Merle Evers is the wife, still living in her 90s, of the late, great Medgar Evers. And I am going to invite you to just type in Merle Evers Williams and to let this be the beginning of your study of this woman's life. And watch her words and listen to her interviews and see her face as a study of resilience. This will be very brief and hopefully the beginning of a series of conversations we have about women like her, her family, her husband. I feel like we need a whole episode on Medgar Evers. This will, you know, be 5 or 10 minutes that we talk about her. Vanessa, would love any of your questions. I learned so much. And then we are going to bring on an invited guest to talk to us and answer our questions, Vanessa, about grief. So that is today's conversation. So let me get into the story. So Merle Evers experienced grief early. She was born to a teen mother in Vicksburg, Mississippi, and her mother and father were not a part of her life. And so when we talk about grief, we don't just talk about the grief of death, but we talk about the grief of lost and lost dreams and lost expectations. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that comes with not having the parenting structure that you always imagined. So she learned grief early and was really rescued by her grandmother and her aunt, who were both just deeply respected in their community as school teachers, which I just love. I just love that so much. Yeah, and she talked about having just a healthy and beautiful community of particularly Black women who just stood for her, cared for her, loved for her, and held her to the very highest expectations. She talked about Vicksburg being like a place that helped stand up, really, the Confederacy, because it was had all of these like battlegrounds in the Civil War and sites when she was growing up. She was born in 1933, so she's just a few years older than my own mother. She was born in 1940, so 1933. And she's living in Mississippi in 1933. We know what was happening in Mississippi in 1933. I mean, the height of lynching didn't happen until the 1920s, so it was still happening. This was 30 years before the civil rights movement was in full swing. She's living in a tiny town in Mississippi with educated Black women. So just imagine that. She talked about how when she would walk down the street, young white kids would call her out of her name and how she had to deal with that. She talked about even far before the civil rights movement that even in the small town of Vicksburg, when the buses were segregated, that she and her friends knew it was wrong and that the bus driver would make short stops and they would be crowded in the back and they would fall on each other and they just knew it was wrong and how they would walk instead of ride for their dignity. So she was already a special person in a special community, living, trying to live an ordinary life in extraordinary terrorism. And as Black women do, they held her strong and she became educated, Vanessa. She went to a great middle school. She was educated by the people in her community. She talked about how her community was deeply dependent on one another in a way that was so healthy, that her grandmother had a garden that supplied their food, that their neighbors had chickens and hens and geese, she talked about, and how they did kind of collaborative economics and how they built this community of like healthy people together there in Vicksburg, Mississippi. Well, Vanessa, as the daughter of educated Black women does, she went on to college and she went to an HBCU that was then Alcorn A&M.
I was a agriculture and medical school. It's now Alcorn State University. So shout out to all our HBCUs. She went there, and on her very first week, might have been her very first day, she met the love of her life, Medgar Evers.
And if you've seen some pictures of Medgar Evers, I'm still just going to imagine she saw him walking.
No, if you've seen some pictures of Murray Evers, they were fine. Okay, you know, he was like a singer in the choir. He was like an athlete. They was like, it was just cute, okay? It was fast. They fell in love fast and hard. And they just knew they had a calling on their lives, and just immediate love, deep and passionate love. Now, he was older than her, Vanessa. He was, I think, 8 years, if I remember right. Y'all know we out here walking. If you're new to Black History Bootcamp, don't be fact-checking and stuff. Listen to the spirit. Listen to the intention, because we all got no notes. We out in these streets walking. And if you're not walking, I invite you to take a 30-minute walk to save your own life today. It might be your mental life. It might be your physical life. Let's build a habit of daily, daily walking and getting outside, getting the vitamin D, the sun, clearing our minds, and slowing down our lives. So this woman and this man fell in love fast, V. And this is one little quick detail that I thought was interesting. He was older than her, and he was almost about to graduate, and he was even older than the students there because he had served in the military. He was a veteran. He was a young veteran. He had gone to World War II and become a sergeant in the military. He was a patriot. He was an American hero. And after he came back from the war, went to an HBCU, was brilliant, was fine, was tall, was handsome, and saw his wife and knew who she was. And they fell in love, y'all. That's what I'm saying. And they fell in love. So Vanessa, she had to make a decision. Her man was graduating. He was the leader of the pack. She knew it was her man. She was like, listen, I know Auntie Nim is educated, so I got to go with my man. She finished college. She went on, married Medgar Evers almost like an exact year after meeting him, Vanessa, on Christmas Eve. It's romantic. Oh, I can't take it. Vanessa, they had 3 babies. They moved to a town in Mississippi and started civil rights work. And together, they started to build a reputation of brilliant young activists. And Vanessa, this was the time, this is 1954, 1955, this was the time, what happened, Black History Bootcamp listeners, Brown versus Board of Education, desegregation of schools. So if you remember, that happened in Kansas, but they're in Mississippi. So what they decide to do, the Evers family, is to test Mississippi on desegregation. And he applies for, I don't know if he applied or he supported the application of the desegregation of the University of Mississippi. And there was a lot of attention there. And what happened is NAACP learned that there was this young, powerful couple in Mississippi doing activism work, and they recruited them really and made him the first field secretary in the state of Mississippi for the NAACP. That is a huge title. His wife became his secretary. And this family put themselves on the line, Vanessa. So they started registering people to vote. They started challenging segregation laws. This is when, what is his name? Oh my gosh, the man who walked. Let me find it.
James Meredith.
John F. Kennedy was in office then. They had to send the National Guard out. It was like 30,000 National Guardsmen to protect James Meredith, who was trying to go to school with the support of Medgar Evers. When Emmett Till was killed, Medgar Evers spoke out against. I mean, this man became the face and the voice of the civil rights movement. He was invited to the White House. He was the golden child, and he and his beautiful wife and beautiful family in Mississippi became the vitriol. I mean, the vitriol of the Ku Klux Klan and the White Citizens Council, who was formed to stop him. The White Citizens Council was created as pro-segregationists to protect their universities and institutions at the threat of this Black family and the activism that they were doing to make sure that all Black people could have equal education in Mississippi.
Can I say something here, Morgan? This story is so powerful because, one, I want to shout out my Aunt Cynthia. Like, everybody hopefully has somebody in their family who, since very young, has been orienting you towards liberation. And my Aunt Cynthia was like my first teacher when I couldn't read and all sorts of stuff. And she taught me and my cousin Rhonda. And now she's helping to raise her grandchildren. And she has a 14-year-old grandson, my nephew Mahari. And he's doing homeschool. And one of his lessons, by the way, was Girl Trek. So we were really excited about that. Like, it's online and Girl Trek was part of the curriculum. But then one of their curriculums, Morgan, was about the civil rights movement. And apparently the question was multiple choice. And the question was, who started the civil rights movement? And she said they gave three choices. The obvious answer was Malcolm X. Was Martin Luther King. Cynthia has written into the homeschool people to tell them that the answer is Medgar Evers. And she was like, and don't be trying to trick my grandson into believing in nothing else. And I was just thinking that how does my auntie at this age trying to raise her grandson even have the energy to write these people at the homeschool to let them know that they done tricked and that the answer is Medgar Evers and that they got to expand their teaching? But she did. And she's like, and you ain't going to have my grandson run on this
answer. Before Dr. King was Medgar Evers. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, Auntie Cynthia. Yes. Yes. Yeah, I remember I could have passed the teacher's exam in Georgia because there's open-ended questions and it always says, what was the impact of Columbus's discovery on America? And I kept writing mass genocide. Yeah. I kept writing mass genocide. And my mentor was like, do you want to teach or not? And they kept failing me by one point. Like, do you want to teach or not? Answer these people question right. And I was like, I won't answer it right. Shout out to the intellectual revolutionaries like Auntie Cynthia. So Vanessa, I listened to a quote. I mean, I listened to an interview last night before I went to sleep. And she said, we knew we were in harm's way. We knew we were in great danger. She said, I knew that I might lose the love of my life, is what she said. These are her words. So one day, his life had been threatened so many times, Vanessa. The Klan had threatened him, and every single day he would get up, his family would get up, they would make breakfast, they would go out every single day, every single day, every single day. But this particular day in 1955, Vanessa, he went out, he handled his business, he came home. There's lots of discussion about this particular day because he usually had FBI agents following him and a police escort. And on this particular day, he did not. And the family is still trying to reconcile. Many people understand that members of the police force were a part of the Ku Klux Klan at the time, particularly in Mississippi. But it is unclear why the federal government was not following him at that time. But on this particular day, he had no protection. And he drove home. He pulled into their beautiful, like, kind of flat home in Jackson, Mississippi. He got out of his car. He's holding NAACP shirts in his hand. His family is there. And he is gunned down, shot in the back in his own driveway, and murdered in broad daylight. The next great coming of a Black hero, the brave Mississippi,
a U.S. veteran, Medgar Evers, is assassinated. And this would begin just outcry across America. I mean, we had lost a golden child. We had lost a leader, not only of a beautiful family, but a beautiful movement. And in 24 hours flat, Vanessa, Merle Evers asked for the microphone, picked up the mantle, and had a call to action for her husband that we carry on. She went to a mass meeting 24 hours after picking up her husband's body and got on the microphone and said, in his honor, the love of my life, we will carry on. And so, Vanessa, I just want anybody out there who is grieving to understand and to pay respect to the obligation to carry on. And grieving is often seen as a distraction, as a pause, but I am saying you can grieve as gratitude, which is today's principle, that in your carrying on can be your grief. That yes, you have to feel the sadness. Do you think in every kind of pregnant word that dripped from her mouth as her husband lay dead in the morgue, that she was not sad? But she loved him more than she could be broken in that moment. But she was grateful for his sacrifice more than she could be stuck in her sadness. And I am telling you all, she went on to honor him, not only in, first of all, if you have not seen the cover of Life magazine that has Merle Evers and her son, it is the most gripping photo of grief of a widow mourning at the funeral, of a single tear falling down faces. I mean, it's just, it was so moving, the human scale of atrocity and terrorism, and that all is lost when we lost Medgar Evers, that this was a defining moment for the consciousness of the planet. And to see her grief on display was to see her love and gratitude for this man. Everyone knew it. In fact, the NAACP used that photo to mobilize a movement, so Aunt Cynthia was not wrong. It was Merle Evers' grief and gratitude for her husband, love for that man, that fueled her life. And she has lived a good life, Vanessa. She has lived a good life. I hope she's listening to this. We love you and we support you and we honor you. She has lived a good life. She promised her man that she would move to California, which was her dream, if anything happened. He was protecting her from the grave because she honored him. She moved their three kids to California. She promised she would go back to school. She went and earned her bachelor's from Pomona. Yeah. She got all these honorary doctorates from everywhere. She went on to run for Congress, to put a bid in for Congress. Vanessa, she became the chairperson of the NAACP, Vanessa. And almost my favorite part of the story, the favorite detail of the story, is not a detail at all. She never gave up on love, and she remarried. And she remarried a man who honored and revered her husband, who was a union activist. Vanessa, she lived a full and beautiful life. And I tell you, that loss alone could have broken most of us. The loss of great love and soulmate could break the best of us. And I tell you, she developed a gratitude practice the very next day. She spoke goodness and promise the very next day. So I want to talk about grief today, and I want to talk about how. I want to talk about what grief can look like, be like. And there is a woman who is vastly becoming an expert on grief in our community. She is a social activist by trade. She works for one of the largest foundations in the entire country. And she is starting her own podcast and was inspired by the work that we're doing with you all. And I was like, please do this podcast because you know so much about grief. And I said, please do us the honor of coming on our podcast first and telling us everything you know. So I want to ask her what her relationship with grief is. And is Victoria on the line?
I'm here.
Hi, Victoria.
Oh, hi, Morgan and Vanessa. Thank you all for just holding space for such an important conversation and all that you all are doing. Like, I'm sitting here in tears. I'm like, I have to talk. You can't have me on your
I was thinking about Victoria. Thank you so much for joining us. I was thinking about how I have like a parade of women in my life who have lost husbands, loved ones, family members, mothers, children. And I know that that is one particular kind, the grief of loss and early death. I want to know what your relationship is with grief. And then I have so many questions, Vanessa. If you have questions, we got about 20 minutes. We'll just try to pepper them in as much as we can and have like a full conversation. So can you just tell us what your relationship is with grief?
Absolutely. And just a little caveat, I am not an expert, okay? I'm not a therapist. I'm not in the mental health or wellness space. These are my personal experiences. So I just wanted to make sure I name that. But I got an introduction to grief at age 4 when I was at my great-grandfather's funeral. I remember my mom dressing me up and she made me go see his body and she made me touch his hand. And I was so afraid. And I remember having nightmares about it because this is the first time I've interacted with a dead body. And since then, even growing up as a kid, I used to have nightmares of that imagery. And my parents, I used to have panic attacks. I used to sleepwalk and I used to wake up and hop in a bed with them because this continued to be a thing, losing people at such a young age. And so finally, when I became an adult and got a chance to take ownership of my mental health, I decided to get therapy. And it was when I moved to New York in 2012, I'd lost another loved one who was a good friend of mine named Day-Day. I used to work in the music industry and he was the tour manager for Nicki Minaj. And he had gone to a bar in Philly that he did not want to go to. And his the person that he was with was trying to talk to this girl at a bar. They got followed out of the bar and he looked back and the guy had stabbed him to death. And I remember just having chills and I couldn't sleep. And I said, I can't live like this. I need to go to therapy and deal with this ongoing, my ongoing relationship or disbelief around death. And, you know, it's the reality. It's the one thing that everyone's going to have to deal with. And so I started to get therapy. I've been in therapy since then. And since then, I've lost more loved ones, but it became easier because I had help and I gave myself the time and the space to grieve. And the most tragic and biggest loss I had was the loss of my dad, which I should change that. It wasn't really tragic, but he had cancer and it happened very quickly. And that's when I started to kind of tap into different coping mechanisms to grieve my father's loss. The biggest one was running and moving my body. And that's when I learned that, you know, you have to give your body the space to grieve, because if you don't, the grief will manifest and come up in different ways, especially in relationships. That's where it was coming up for me. And I had to really take ownership. You know, it's a bunch of things. It's not just therapy. You really have to find what works for you. So that's my introduction around grief.
I'm so sorry for your losses. I'm so sorry. And, you know, I'm grateful that you started off with the loss of your grandfather. And like, as a child, I just remember going to really sad funerals when I was like a baby.
Yeah.
Very sad funerals. And my sister, actually, I hope she's listening to this, lost her father when she was little. And she just wouldn't go to any more funerals. Like, our whole life. We just knew Kendra wasn't going. But like nobody stopped to say, is Kendra okay? You know what I mean?
It's hard.
It's so hard. And I come from a place where we don't hold it in at all. I come from Mississippi, Crenshaw, Mississippi. And when people die, like it'd be the little church house with the family plot at the church. And then the windows, I don't even think it got windows. Are they wide open? And like the bugs and stuff is coming in and it smells like onions. And then people just lay down on the floor like, no, don't take her. And it's just like traumatizing. And I just be like, okay, well, that's sad. You know what I mean? Like, that's sad. But I actually think that's healthier than this kind of newfangled grief that we have where we just try to button up and go back to work.
Yeah,
what do you
think? That's like the culture. That's what we're taught in the Black community. And even people passively say it, like, you know, you got to move on or like keep pushing. And I believe in the opposite of that. I think you should take time, take those days off, sit and cry, do what you need to do to get it out and to process and take as long as you need. And, you know, I had those memories as a child and people don't realize that that stuff sticks with you. Even at 4 years old, I can still see my great grandfather in the casket, even at four, you know, it happened at 4 years old. And I want to recommend a book that I've been reading called The Body Keeps the Score. It's by Bessel van der Kolk. Mm-hmm. And it talks about how your body holds on to those traumatic events. And at any given moment, you can be triggered and you go back to that memory. And so it's important that we take the time to process, and that looks differently for everyone. Like my mom loves to cook and my dad loved her cooking. We all loved her cooking. So I know that on Sunday when I go home to visit, I'm in the kitchen with her, we're playing our music, and sometimes she'll hum and cry and I know what's happening there, but it brings her so much excitement and it makes her feel like she's closer to daddy. So you have to find really what works for you.
I love these suggestions, and I want to point out attention here, because I actually think in a fully functional, healthy society, like say Africa, when we grieve, we take the time to grieve, right? So I think Mississippi culturally and all of the American South culturally is very close to Africa. But I think that the terror and trauma that we were in did not for Merle Evers and does not for us provide the latitude and spaciousness to actually grieve. And so I believe my principle for her that feels very helpful for me, because I feel grief every day. I grieve ideas when I wake up. I'm like, oh, I wanted to do this, but I don't got the money for this. I wanted to do this, but they didn't call me back. I feel grief every day, but I don't feel like I can just like wallow in it or even feel it. I just feel like gotta keep moving. And I feel like the thing that I learned from Merle Evers is how to transmute that pain into gratitude. And so I don't actually feel like I have the spaciousness that like my Auntie Betty Ann did when my grandma died, to just fall on the floor and to be despondent.
Yeah. And that's
what do you think about that? Yeah.
You know, I grapple with this because culturally, you know, I've learned that self-care is a luxury. Not everyone can take 5 days off. People have families to feed. You know, therapy is not cheap, you know? And so I kind of like go back and forth, like, yeah, you do need to take the time to grieve, but you have to really going back to that point, find what works for you. And to your point, it's not just grieving the loss of a loved one. I have friends, a lot of my friends are getting married and having babies now, and they are grieving their former lives. They can't just get up and go see Beyonce, who's coming in town in 2 weeks, because they have babies to care for. And to me, like, that's an act of self-care. Like, I would love to go see them. That's me grieving, like, let's go. And so we have to like really find what works for you. Maybe it's taking a warm bath and listening to music and dropping lavender in your bath and just taking that 10 minutes out of your day to do something nice for yourself and to sit with your thoughts. And maybe it's writing in your journal at night or when you wake up. I start and end every day with God. And I give him thanks for giving me the breath to, you know, live to see another day. And to me, that's a form of release. I'm releasing what happened
that's
today.
That's a form of release. Yes.
Yeah. waking up.
That gratitude practice is really important. And Vanessa turned me on to a app called the 5 minute meditation. Oh. 5 minute journal. Five minute journal.
Oh, you turned me on to 5 minute journal.
Oh, I did. Oh, we're kind of the same. Okay. So there's two apps. There's one called 5 minute journal and there's one called Pause. Pause is Christian based. 5 minute journal is like mindfulness meditation based. And 5 minute journal prompts you to say what you're grateful for. And you have to do it mostly when you don't feel like doing it. You'd be like, ah, not now. I don't want to do this little three bullets right now. And then the Pause app, you schedule in pause for you to really connect with your source. And so both of those are really good examples of what you're saying. If you don't have the discipline of Victoria, which listen, Victoria got some discipline, y'all. You know, they're writing and stuff. That's good. You can just also use some of this technology to help us. You said something that I thought was really interesting, Victoria. You said that people are grieving their former lives and their former lifestyle. And I think that partly, even when we lose loved ones, that still is the underlying grief, that it was, it's the change in, that that you were required. And I just, I think about, I talked to you guys last week about Dr. Bennett talking about what's killing Black women, and he talks about stress. And he said, perceived stress and then the actual things we go through. And he said some of the actual things we go through that particularly Black women don't talk about the impacts of are things like divorce or things like having babies, right? And how that impacts your life. And so we have to grieve daily. And part of the kind of the shadow side of the pain is called grief usually. But the balcony side of the pain is called gratitude, and gratitude that we are still here, and gratitude that we can, that we are able to move and have life in our being. So I just promise you all that whatever pain you're feeling, if you can just count your blessings, write them down, as Victoria says. Vanessa, did you have a question for Victoria?
I did have a question. This conversation has been really enriching. I'm thinking about all of the people listening right now whose grief is tied to relationships that weren't maybe in the best place, say when somebody passed on, or who have like such unresolved things around their relationships. I was thinking about my own experience. One, the first time I went to a funeral, it was my grandmother who was my primary caregiver because my mother had been in prison. And I was only 13 years old, and I just had so many thoughts and emotions. And then at the, Morgan knows this because I've told her about it, but at the funeral, like probably one of the most traumatic things that's ever happened to me is that my mom was able to come to the service from prison, and they brought her in shackles, feet and arms, and these guards surrounding her. And I just collapsed in the funeral. Like, Ken, this is just too much for me. And like out of that experience, I just was like, there was just so much unresolved that I wanted to talk about and to my grandmother about, to my mother about, and there's never been an opportunity. And then even my father, we had a very distant relationship. I only really saw him 2 times in my life, but I can recall that I had so many things that I always envisioned that at some point I'm going to sit down with him. I'm going to explain this to him. We're going to have these conversations. I'm going to be heard. I'm going to be validated. And then he got killed in a car crash. And I was just like, was that the whole story? Like all these years, I really thought there was going to be this opportunity in this time, and it just never came. And so I think there's probably a lot of people out there who are navigating a grief that feels like a open, gaping, pussing wound because the relationship was that. And I'm just wondering if you have any advice for those people.
I'm so, so sorry to hear about your grandmother's loss and, you know, your relationship with your mom and your father's tragic loss. What I often do sometimes, which sounds really woo-woo, is I invite my ancestors into my space. And I had some unresolved things with my cousin who passed away. He was like one of my best friends, and we were very, very close. And I didn't understand why he died. He died in his sleep. I'm like, what the fuck? And sometimes, pardon my language, I invite him in the space and I write him letters that he'll that he'll never actually physically receive, but I feel like he can read them. And I will write him a letter whenever I'm feeling like I have a question for him. He used to send me Bible verses every morning, and I write Christopher letters. I don't do that with my dad. I talk to him out loud, and I'll ask him questions, and I'll dream. And sometimes he'll come in my dreams because I've invited him in. And so I just encourage you to get it out. Like, if you have to write a letter to them, create your sacred space, create your sanctuary, and get that out so that you're not holding that space in your body. You're not holding that space in your head. At the very least, get it out, because whether you believe it or not, they're here. They can see everything, and they know the pain that you're holding on the inside. And I'm hoping that they would want you to get that out too. So I would just encourage anyone who has a similar story or who's holding on to something so deeply that you did not get to say to your loved one that has transitioned, get it out, because I think you will feel a lot lighter once you do. And if writing isn't the way for you to do it, talk it. Send a voice note, record it on the phone, you know, whatever helps you get that out, get it out, or lean into community. That's one thing I have to learn to do when I was grieving my father's loss. I joined a run club, and they didn't know what was happening with me on the inside. They didn't know I was grieving, but I knew I had that support. I knew I could, if I showed up, I had that support. And so find community and lean into community. I think that's one of the most important things that people don't do because they're scared to be vulnerable. Lean into community, I think, is a big one.
I love that.
Thank you. Those are such good suggestions.
Vanessa, I can't wait for you to do that. I can't wait for you to have conversations. Do you already do that, V? Do you talk to
me? You know, it's funny. I do invite my ancestors in, but only the ones that I feel like I could hold a good memory. But then there's so many relationships that I've had where people have passed on suddenly and traumatically. And yeah, I do feel like I have had more to say, and I just feel like it's so complex that I haven't done that, so I need to.
It's a powerful practice, and Victoria is not woo-woo. We love woo-woo here. We are daughters of Africa, and we actually understand that our power is cosmic, and that this plane that we're experiencing right now is like a little vapid. Like, we are part of a dynamic universe where our ancestors live with us and guide us. So absolutely, absolutely. If you have a question for Victoria, or if you just need to air something out, or you want us to hear and bear witness and be the community that Victoria talked about, just press *9 and speak, y'all. You can't hold grief in. Some of you may, and there's no grief too small. If you've lost a pet and it just broke your heart, or if you have lost a job and you don't know what to do with your, there is no grief too small. Write in the mornings, connect with your source, take care of yourself, in short spurts, bath with lavender, write and tell somebody what you're feeling, talk to the deceased, write letters to the dead ones, invite them into your space and into your dreams. There are so many wonderful things, and get back into your body and live and practice gratitude in this body. Take breath in and out in this body now as a thank you for each and every moment we get to be alive. Mm-hmm. It's the thing I love most about Merle Evers, is that, my God, she lived so fast. After so hard, she went so, I mean, she got after life. She got after it. And she could have shut down and been broken by it. Mm-hmm. Oh. Vanessa, did you have anything, any comments or thoughts on the story or what Victoria is saying or any other questions? And we will take any callers, *9.
We have a bunch of hands raised, so I want to make space for, for the women to for the woman to come in. And no, I just want to honor that, man, from the beginning of this conversation, I could feel my own grief welling up physically in my body. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how tender it is for so many people, these like emotions and feelings. And one practice that I have been really working on is to hold space, bear witness, experience, but not be consumed by. So
Yeah. I just want to offer that to people, that you can be a witness to your own grief in a way that allows you to see it, to be curious about it, to interrogate it, to ask it questions. You can do all of those things. And then also you can say, thank you for that. I'm going to put you down now. And you can just pick up something different at you know what I'm saying? Like you can really, really do that. I found myself yesterday, I was in a just like a mood for like some sort of reason. And I was just like, I can just put these things down. Like it was a lot of like complicated things. And I was just like, cause right now I want to experience something else. I wanted to experience some joy. I wanted to go hang out with my friend. I wanted to do, and I was just like, I'm gonna come back to those things. So I just offer that to people, that even one movement is powerful. And so walking while we are having this conversation, seeing like, does the feeling move from your chest to your hips, to your back, to your, like, where is it? And just having a little bit of a curiosity that is not judgment of you, that is not judgment of the fact that you feel this, but it's just an honoring of, there is an energetic accumulation of grief that you can physically feel in your body, but it doesn't have to consume your body. You don't even have to hold on to it. And at any moment you can say, I see you, I feel you, I wonder where you're coming from. I'm even gonna explore you in the morning when I write my letter, but right now I also wanna let you down.
Victoria and Vanessa, I love that too. And when you just said that, it reminds me, like, the energetic feeling of grief, I sometimes think in a world of injustice, because I think grief comes a lot from injustice, right? That rage is sometimes what we think is rage is actually grief. Like what we think we're just angry at society, at the world, at this man, and it's actually grief. What do you think about that, both of you?
I think you've nailed it. I'm going to read an excerpt really quick before we go to the question that someone had. It's from The Body Keeps the Score, and it's everything you're saying is relating to this passage. It says, why traumatic memories that keep intruding until they are laid to rest, traumatic adaptations continue until the human organism feels safe and integrates all the parts of itself that are stuck in fighting or warding off the trauma. Every trauma survivor I've met is resilient in his or her own way, and every one of their stories inspires awe at how people cope. Knowing how much energy the sheer act of survival requires keeps me from being surprised at the price they often pay, the absence of a loving relationship with their body, minds, and souls. Coping takes its toll. I just wanted to like read that strong passage, because everything you said, it can really take on its own living life inside of your body and your mind and your soul. So it's important that you put it down, acknowledge it and say, you're not winning today, put it down, come back to it, release it. And so thank you, Vanessa, for like just naming that you can compartmentalize, and that's okay.
Look, y'all, my mama sent me The Body Keep the Score. I was like, okay, mama, I'll see you. I'll see you.
Like, that's a testimony. That made me want to shout out here on this road, Vanessa. That made me want to shout out here on this road. Because what you, even like you fainting in the funeral, which was so powerful. Thank you for sharing that. I'm so sorry that happened to you. But you also imagine what your mother in her body must have felt like, shackled, coming to see her mom and seeing her collapsed daughter. Like, so for her to send you that book is generational healing, Vanessa. It is generational healing, and I thank God for it. I thank God, and I know it don't always feel that way, but it is. I thank God for it. And I want to open up the lines. Victoria, you are brilliant. Victoria, have you come up with a name for your podcast? Because I feel like we need about 17 episodes of your podcast to just get in it.
It's called Good Grief, actually.
Good Grief, yes! Good Grief, yes. We will definitely share it through our platforms as soon as you are up and running and live. We will share it, but look out. Is it coming this summer?
Fall. I'm doing some pilot episodes with friends, and then I'm going to tap into my network and cover the different ways grief manifests, but more to come. I gotta just get out there and do it. I'm talking all this stuff.
No, you done helped us on this call. We about to help you. It's coming this summer. It's coming this summer, y'all. We got to help Victoria. We need it, Victoria. Don't be pilot. We don't got no time for no pilots. that Victoria said about community, that I promise you, Vanessa and I took some of you on the phone, like 30 powerful organizers to upstate New York to Omega Institute. And we brought this beautiful, what is her name? Stanley, the yoga teacher?
Yeah, Tracy Stanley out of California.
Stanley. Find her on YouTube, on Instagram, Tracy Stanley. This beautiful woman who talks about relaxation and yoga and is powerful. She had us laying on our backs and she had us lift our arms, breathe and exhale and drop our arms. And as soon as people dropped their arms, people started boo-hoo crying. This is everyday women like me and you. I mean, boo-hoo screaming crying. Because they felt safe with one another and we felt safe with Tracy. And I promise you, Girl Trek creates that community for you to be able to be safe and heal. And I promise you, y'all, in the next year, we are going to provide spaces for you to come in person and experience release with us. Experience release. Remember we did that sound bath? I mean, we had some release. I mean, it was hundreds of women. Or we did drumming where we had these sticks and we were drumming the ground. I mean, it has been unbelievable, our community, and it is coming back, I promise you. The stress protest is not happening this year. I know you've heard it. Please spread the word. It's not happening this year, only so that we can double down, prepare, get in line so that we can expand. It is a discipline move so that we can expand, y'all. Let's open up the lines and get a few callers.
While the caller is coming on, I just walked past a tiny library, and the book in there is Walk in My Shoes, The Path to Empathy and Compassion, and it's even signed by the author. I'm definitely taking this one.
Like, this will be for me. Caller, are you there?
Hello?
Hi, sister. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Karen King Abair. And I am calling from Tallahassee, Florida. And I just want to start briefly. Thank you, Vanessa and Morgan, for your service. And Victoria, all of you, really. I am just resonating with each and everything that you guys have said this afternoon. Years and years ago, I used to have to actually see the person that was dead in order to know for myself. And I took it very, very hard, very, very hard. And I was always so impressed at my mother, the way she approached death and the way she accepted death. And so that's what I've been working on for myself, especially after I lost my dad and then I lost my mother. And after I lost my mom, I thought, oh my gosh, what am I here for? I felt like I wanted to die. And so then I had to recalibrate and I had to think about what she had taught me. And that is, if we live, we will die. And so now I'm almost on the other spectrum. I was really, really consumed with death years and years ago, but now I'm embracing my mother's thought, and that is, if you live, you will die, and we have to actually accept it. And so now I'm feeling kind of guilty about being calmer about losing people. And I know that may sound kind of strange, but it's giving me a strange kind of peace that I don't have that angst anymore about death as I had years ago. Thank you guys for your service and thank you for this safe space. I appreciate you all and love you.
Victoria, do you have a response to that? I love that.
Yeah, I think it's a common feeling that people don't talk about, which is why I want to really start this podcast, because once you get on the other side of your healing or you get further along your journey, it does. And it's not even sadly, it's a part of life. It does become easier to cope. And, you know, it's like, to your mother's point, if we live, we are all going to die. So I just encourage you to not feel that guilt or remorse or survivor's remorse, whatever it is, because that's a natural feeling. Just, you know, as we kept reiterating, release that. Don't feel guilty about that. I think that's actually healthy that you've come to terms with there's life and there's death, and you're going to lose loved ones. We are all going to lose loved ones and friends, as morbid as it sounds. And I think that's a healthy, that's something that really shifted within yourself and within your brain. And I think that you're making healthy progress. So I wouldn't beat yourself up about it at all.
I also would think that, I think that you are so radically connected to your mother that you know she's not dead. And mm-hmm. I actually think that it is expansive to know, just like the seasons, I'm standing on a farm right now, all of this corn will die off and it will come back. All of these weeds and herbs that are blowing in the wind will die off and they will come back because they are connected to a greater source, that this life is seasonal, and that whatever your religion, whatever your belief system is, you have to know and understand and feel, even without words, feel a connection to what is eternal. And then it makes you fearless. And then it makes you really love. And I like to think that Merle Evers was able to stand on the podium because she experienced true love. And when you experience true love, you know that never goes away. It never goes away. It's just transferred. It never, ever goes away. So I'm grateful for your healing, sister. Vanessa, did you have thoughts? And let's bring in one other caller while Vanessa's speaking.
Yeah, and I'm walking past this memorial to this Black woman in the neighborhood, even just as we talk. And when the other caller just came on, I was thinking about how Abraham Hicks, somebody who, like a woman who I follow and Morgan knows who we really like, she always says, like, I'm going to talk about death as croaking or in the most disrespectful way, because it's all an illusion many ways, and that, you know, we are alive in so many different planes and fields. And I kind of have also, there comes a time where you simply can't hold the level of death that we're even asked to hold. And so letting it go a little bit to understand, even if you believe just in like heaven and all these things, but it's like, if whatever you believe, it's like that your faith says, let it go a little bit. Don't cling, that there's beauty in this process, beauty in this life. And to me, it goes back to the grieve as gratitude, because then it becomes gratitude for the experiences you did have with this person. Gratitude that this person is a part of now your like ancestral lineage or energetic history, or, you know, just a part of your circle and community. And to stay in that space to know that, wow, some people go a lifetime and never experience the love that Merle and Maker experience. Some people get
say
to experience it for a, look, for a brief moment in
right
time.
Here.
That's it, for a brief moment in time. And it's better to have had some beautiful experience than to have had nothing. And so, like, I imagine her feeling that. Like, literally, I imagine that she's just like, I had the opportunity to experience this. It even gives her a North Star for her next marriage and relationship around. And look, that's why she hyphenated her name and kept Evers in her name even. And shout out to her next husband who created space for her to still be able to do that. And so I think that the
ability even in the 90s, when she had remarried, she still went back and fought for justice for Megar Evers. And they prosecuted
right.
that man, whose name I don't even want to say. It's disgusting that he lived free for 30 years. And Vanessa, she exhumed the body of Megar Evers, and her son, because it was embalmed, it was still preserved. And her son got to see, as an adult, got to see his father's body. I'm telling you, the trauma that we have experienced as a people, and still he was able to function in a place of great gratitude and moral fortitude to fight for justice for this man, even just in the And the man was, there was a new judge in Mississippi, and she saw this as an opportunity. She went back and they prosecuted him because there was an all-white jury back in the 50s and 60s. We know that. And he got exonerated. And then there's outrage, but he still lived a free life. Just lived free in Mississippi. And so she finally got justice. He went to jail and he died in jail after 7 or 8 years. So I think there might be another caller on the line. Thank you so much for that, Vanessa. To love and lose is better to never have lost again, or something like that, whatever that quote is. I think about our sister Key, Mason, who lost the love of her life. I think about that. And It took her a moment to be how you described porous, where she could feel kind of his presence just through her and not held on to the sadness of it all. It took her a long time. But I'm telling you, I just talked to her 2 days ago and she's there. She was like, ooh, love. She was talking to me about my love. She was like, ooh, that seems like it's going to be good for you, because she knows what good love is.
Yeah.
She knows what good love is. And so shout out to our friend Key. Let's take one more caller.
And it's why it's worth the risk, y'all. It's like, it's worth the risk, because some of us are living in that, like, I'm dipping my toes in the water, but I don't want to jump in because of what might be lost. But like, that is the great journey of life, which is to know it will be lost regardless, actually, one way or the other. And so it's better to get in, let the water wash over your face and your whole body, and to have the experiences that you are supposed to have.
That's why the people we know and respect, the great adventurers like Bessie Stringfield, got married 6 times. She's like, I'm jumping in.
Exactly. Look, I'm in it to win it. I need y'all to know. I'm J-Lo and Elizabeth Taylor up in this game. And it's like, I'll be in it 8 times, 9 times, however many times it's going to take me. Because what's the point of doing something halfway? Like, I believe every love could be the great love. Every situation could be the wrong situation. Yeah.
But I have to, I believe that too about love. You know I do. You know I'm in it too. But I'm saying the grief of, say, losing a parent, though, Vanessa, which both of us have.
Yeah.
Mine from divorce, and I have feelings of abandonment, which really are grief. It's mourning what I thought I should have had from a man growing up. And yours that you shared with us, how do we jump back in with our parents, whether they are living or past? How do we jump back in and say, it's okay to be, or how do we jump back in and parent to ourselves, or like not hold on to the rage, which really is inside grief, you know? How do we jump back in there is a question, and really a challenge I have for both of us. I'm gonna call them.
Sure.
All in the day. Because God say so. God say get in alignment and let it wash over you. Yes. Sure. Is there another caller? I want to open up the lines.
Hello. Oh.
What's your name and where are you calling from?
Okay, this is Elena Dynasteria. I live in Norfolk, but I am originally from Seattle.
Stand up, Dynas family. Y'all a dynasty in Seattle. You already know.
So I want to really kind of answer your question as well. I lost my mother. My mother died when I was 3 years old from cancer. We lived in Seattle. Because we lost our home, we ended up having to move back into the project. Shout out to Rainier Vista Project, right, Vanessa?
Yes.
And 2 months after we moved into the Rainier Vista Project, my beloved brother Ronnie was killed because he had a white girlfriend. This was in 1966. 2 years later, my father was killed by the police in Seattle. He was trying to protect me, because it was a young white boy that was trying to run me and my friends over with his mini bike, because we used to tease him. So my father, being the Southern Alabama man that he was to protect his child, he just got his rifle out and shot in the air and told the boy, stop. That was the last time that I saw my father. He was taken to jail. I was left in the house by myself for hours, contemplating. And finally, my sister came. One of my sisters came, so I'm youngest of 10. She came home. Her and my brother came home. They got us out the window, got me out of the window, because the authorities were coming to take me down to wherever they take children who they feel are abandoned. They took me to my sister's godmother's house. And that was in 1968. Now, let's fast forward to 2020, when the young man, George Floyd, was killed. I watched that on May the 27th. I was triggered. And my therapist told me that what triggered me, and the reason why I felt that way, is because I mourned my father when I was 9 years old. But I never grieved the injustice And that's what I was grieving at that time. Because you can grieve the person, but you have to grieve also the situation that caused you to be in that. And through lots of therapy, through lots of love, because I believe that only love can help you get through these things. As justice was never served in both my brother and my father, and of course not my mother because of cancer, you carry that. And I bless God for the opportunity to help people to understand that you need to make sure you give yourself, as you said, space and time to grieve. So yes, writing letters. And I want to tell you, I've been a member of Girl Trek since 2012. I saw the article in Heart and Soul, and I was like, yeah, this is what I do. And a lot of times, as a matter of fact, right after I saw the George Floyd video, I went for a walk. I called my girlfriend, and I was like, hey, let me tell you something. This, because my girlfriend happens to be a therapist, I said, this telehealth is not working for me. So I was able to go over to her house, and she provided me space to start that process. And it's the people that love you that will help you. Because as you said, and Bell Hooks said, that rage is depression turned inside out. And we need to recognize that, help ourselves to get better by doing whatever is necessary to get better. But to remember the people and to love the people and talk to them as we do the things that we go about in this life. I appreciate both of you for everything that you've done for me, because I am also a cancer survivor, 2 years in remission, and it was back in 2020 that you all sent me this beautiful plan as I was reaching out to the mental health line that you all discovered. You all have helped me walk through this life like you don't even know. I love you.
Oh, my God.
Thank you. I thank you, and I support everything that I can to do, because even the stress process, going to that mountain, has helped me with my grief. Getting out and getting the love that I deserve has helped me to get through.
Yes. I am so grateful that we open up these lines, because that was a whole podcast episode in and of itself. It was beautiful. It was anointed. It was exactly what we needed to hear, that we just don't grieve people. We grieve injustice is like, could be a whole book, sister, that I encourage you to write. It is so beautiful. So beautiful. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for your support. Shout out to Carla, who's our VP of care, who takes good care of us all the time. And please send your prayers to her as she is healing right now. I'm so grateful for this community. And Victoria is a part of this community. I think she has to say goodbye. She may have had to say goodbye right there, Victoria.
I'm still here. Thank you so much for having me, and the lady that just spoke, thank you for sharing that. This is what community is about, and you all have created such a sacred space that I am so grateful to now be a part of. So thank you so much. I'm going to continue to pray for every single person on this call, and I can't wait to see you all in person in August and go on a walk together. And so thank you, and I'm sorry I have to lead another call for work, but I'm just so grateful.
No, it's okay. Thank you for joining us. We can't wait for your podcast. We will share it broadly. We're up against time, and that was a perfect way to end. Vanessa, did you have any closing thoughts?
Just grateful for the stories that have been shared and for the women who hold space. And I mean, I'm just believing that we are just like the aspen trees that you spoke about, all interconnected, all at the root. The woman who just came on from Dynasty, I know her family very well, went to prom with her nephew. And like, it's like, I could have never imagined when I was like, you know, little, that somehow the thing I'm working on would be a solution for her and her family. And I just feel grateful.
Vanessa, where I am right now, it's 1:11, and I believe that is powerful, and that we are having a breakthrough as a community. And I believe from George Floyd to all the people we've lost from injustice, certainly back to Medgar Evers, that God is bringing a whirlwind of healing and understanding and spaciousness for us. And I'm just so grateful for that. I'm just so grateful. So thank you all. Vanessa, we are cosmic beings. We come from the planet of cosmic beings. We come from definitely the continent of healers and shapeshifters and firewalkers and people who understand that this here walk is just one pathway to the great existence of I Am. And I tell you, I've been following this girl for about 3 years. Her name is Iniko. And she just blew up like 4 or 5 months ago on Instagram. And I looked at her. This song has 40 million hits. It's called Jericho. It just reminds me of who we truly are. So if you are feeling sad, both women were talking, I felt like collapsing. Like you said, when you were a baby, I felt that. I felt you, Victoria, both of the sisters who came on, I just felt the grief. And then she said love, the last woman who called. What is her name?
Grace.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. She said love, but we have to figure out how to touch love and figure out love. And as soon as she said the word love, I opened up and I opened my arms. 40 million people have downloaded this song because it feels like radical love. And it's called Jericho. Play it if you're not listening live. We love you all and we'll see you tomorrow.